Hi, I'm Dan Schinder.
And I'm Steven Schinder.
And you're watching Yes Shift, a podcast and vlog dedicated to the many shifts through the long career of Yes. And this is a news desk episode where we also touch on Yes's extended family and other prog news. And I have to say, Steven, you've really dug up a lot of stuff here, because out of everything we're going to cover, there's only two things that I was aware of. So this is really cool. And of course, as always, we want to give our fans a nod first who write into us. So let's start with that.
Yeah. And after that, there will be some news about archival releases pertaining to like early Squire and Banks stuff, as well as Asia. And yeah, some recent activity by band members and such. So yeah, we'll just, and we'll also talk about that Future Memories video that just came out. But
it's interesting that's the title, because I was just going to dovetail on what you just said and say we're basically shifting back and forth through Yes's history. And then the song video is Future Memories, which is such an interesting concept, that title. I love it. But let's let it rip with fans.
Yeah. So these are comments regarding the Tom Brislin episode we put out earlier this week. We're recording on October 15th right now. So,
2021.
Yeah, 2021. We should clarify. So this comment is from Brad Delph, who says, I met Tom Brislin in Toronto in 2010 while performing for Renaissance, backing Steve Hackett. He was nice enough to sign my Yes book. He wrote additional musicians. And he commented a photo of the signed book with like all the names. And yeah, it says Tom Brislin. And below that it says AKA additional musicians.
Yeah, and you could see it there on the screen if you're watching the video version of this, of that. It was kind enough to put that picture in there. So I'm sorry that I don't know this, but is it my understanding that Renaissance was Steve's backup band, not his opening band, correct?
I'm actually not sure.
Okay. And I'm sorry, folks, that if we seem like dum-dums for not knowing that, but I just don't know that. So, Brad, maybe you could tell us or anybody else. And I'm sorry, I got like some, I rubbed my eye and I think I had like hot chili or something on my finger. That's not nice. So anyways, that's cool and funny. Yeah, of Tom.
Welcome to the Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast.
In your eye.
Yeah.
And then we've got a note from Kevin Pearson, who says, after Dan's comment about the Hollywood Bowl concert, I had to listen to the bootleg of that recording. I don't know if I've ever heard that. No, I've seen it. I've seen a video of it, now that I think of it, way back then. He says, the train wreck is slightly different than Dan said, but still hilarious. After Anderson actually does start the lyrics at the right moment, but only gets out, stand and fight, we do consider. And then I guess that's where it falls apart. So kind of remembered that wrong. So thanks for clearing that up, Kevin. He says, I really enjoyed the episode, guys. Thank you. I actually have not paid any attention to Brislin's career before or after Yes. His involvement in the last Kansas album intrigues me, and I will for sure take a listen to that and Spiraling as well. I look forward to the next episode. Maybe sometime you could tackle books about Yes and its members, or even an episode on their DVDs. Take care. So the books idea is great. I never thought of that. And we did actually get a... you did, and I forgot.
Well, on a previous episode, we talked about the upcoming book, Yes, in the 80s. And we were like, yeah, right, maybe we should talk about that.
That's right. And we did have Brian Harris, I believe, is the one who suggested that we do a thing on the Yes concert DVD. So glad Kevin's on board with that, too. Hopefully it means a lot of you fans are, and Steve and I are going to figure out how to do that. I think what we're going to do, we live a few hundred miles away from each other because you can't stand me. So we're going to, we'll probably maybe be on Zoom together and watch them on our flat screens or something, so we can, you know, it'd be fun to do it together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so we'll work out the logistics and time on that. But wait, there's more from fans.
Yeah, Brian Breen says, I was at the 2015 Renaissance concert at NJPAC in Newark. Patrick played two segments, referring to Patrick Mraz, a solo piano medley of his compositions and Ashes Are Burning with the band Renaissance. Best part was during the jam section of Ashes when he and Tom were trading fours, electrifying.
I would love to see that. That is so cool. Right? Can you imagine?
Yeah. That's I mean, I don't know what fours means because I'm not musically literate, but that does sound cool seeing them play together.
Yeah, basically four measures. So each one takes four measures. For example, if it's in 4/4, each measure is four counts. Kind of like in Songs from Tsongas when Rick Wakeman and Steve Howe.
Side of the Sky?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. And this other comment actually makes sense to something else I heard. Brian McLean writes in saying, Dan looks like Lou Molino. Now, Lou, of course, is the drummer for Anderson. I always fuck up this name. Those three guys, Trevor, Rick, and John.
Yeah, he's, ARW, he's, yeah.
Yeah, and now this makes sense. He says, Dan looks like Lou Molino, and I heard that Lou was claiming to be Dan from Drum Talk TV trying to get a discount on the subscription at Drum Channel. So, hey, yeah, Don Lombardi called me and said, hey, was that you in the lobby trying to get a discount? No, that was Lou. All right, moving on.
Wait, did that actually happen?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, we also got a comment from someone going by Tom Brizzle in Music saying, delighted to be the topic of discussion on the Yes Shift episode. Huh, I wonder who that is.
Interesting. Yeah, that was quite cool. So hopefully you folks have caught up and listened to that episode. Really great info on Tom. If you're not familiar with his career, and we'd love to have him on. Did we mention it yet to him? We're going to reach out. We're going to have him on, right. I'm sure. I'd love to talk more with Tom about his career. There's some great clips as well, and a soundtrack as well under some of our discussion. Really great stuff. And then we move into Yes, Future Memories music video, which just came out. I'll let you start with this, and maybe we can comment back and forth on it. I saw it right before we started recording. Steve sent it to me earlier in the day, and I got to watch it. And I actually asked Steve to move it up in our program today so that the thoughts were fresh in my mind. But you go ahead. What do you think of it? I have thoughts and questions about it.
Yeah, and we also have a few fan comments about that. But my impression of it is... So the song itself has been growing on me. It's really good. I love it. But the music video, I was kind of confused. Like, I think more so than the Ice Bridge and Dare to Know music videos, I feel like there's sort of a disconnect between the song and what is shown in the video. Because the song itself, I thought, was probably about some sort of personal relationship, but
I thought it was about a love interest.
Yeah, but the music video would maybe make one think, oh, is this about making memories listening to Yes music or something? Like, and it's basically, it incorporates, I would say, probably almost every Roger Dean Yes cover that's been done, with a few exceptions. Like,
the exceptions? I don't remember any exceptions.
So there was no Open Your Eyes
cover. Oh, I thought you meant exceptions as in a couple covers that weren't his, which isn't the case. It's all Roger Dean.
Yeah, it's all Roger Dean. It looks like almost everyone except Open Your Eyes. A few of the videos, like Live at Montreux, Yes Acoustic, Yes Speak, the director's cut. And maybe a couple others. I don't think Yes Shows was in there, but
In there. Yes Songs wasn't. Oh, part of Yes Songs, the fold out was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Yes Shows was in there actually.
Okay.
In fact, it showed the part that says Yes Shows.
Yeah, and you had like Yesterdays and like all sorts of stuff. Like I would say almost every Roger Dean Yes cover is in there, even live and studio stuff from recent years or the past like
Yeah,
20
a
years.
nice cross section of that relationship. And that, in fact, is what makes the video confusing to me, because I started wondering, is it about Chris? Is it about Roger Dean? Is
Yeah,
it like,
like they don't want to do another Yes album without him? Like, what's going
yeah,
on?
it is misleading given the song on its own, what you think it's about. It's clearly about some relationships. I thought it was a love interest. Then, you know, sometimes like this went on in the 80s, big time in MTV, where there'd be a song and a video as if someone left a television on and there happens to be a song playing. There was like no relationship between the two. I hope it's not that, but if it's not that, then what the hell is it? It's so curious and it's a beautifully made video.
Yeah, like with the paintbrush and yeah,
Yeah,
like the production value is good. It's just confusing.
And it's interesting to see how the new logo, the stained glass, leaded glass version of the logo kind of comes together as liquid paint and then solidifies to look like the logo on the cover. That was really
Yeah.
cool. The some of the close-ups of detail on some of the albums was really cool to see as well. But the big niggling thing that's distracting me is this spinning plate of what does it mean? What does it mean? But it is a beautiful song. It is. It sounds great. The
Yeah.
backing vocals sound good. The guitar work sounds good. All the guitars. John's voice sounds very good. I would like to have heard Billy's bass turned up again, though.
Yeah, this like it is really weird. Like I can imagine a Yes fan putting a similar video together, maybe not the same production value, but like a collection of Roger Dean Yes covers, maybe set to a song like The Remembering or something like Stand on Hills of Long Forgotten Yesterday, you know, that type of
Yeah,
thing.
that's a good point. I'm on
Yeah.
it.
But yeah, this is kind of related. It's kind of a tangent, but I was listening to a Steve Howe interview on a podcast called Rock Solid. It actually came out around the time The Quest was coming out. And so it kind of predates the Billy interview, but he basically said that they do hope to play songs from The Quest and that it'll probably be the songs that the fans know best. And so that gets me wondering, like, is it basically gonna be these songs that are released as singles slash music videos, like those will be the best known ones,
That
or
makes the most sense. But I don't understand the phrase, we hope to play music off the Quest. Why would you put out a new album and that even be a question? We talked about this on a recent news episode, I think.
yeah, I mean, I've seen comments from Steve and a couple of the other members,
Maybe that's just his
but
vernacular. I don't know.
yeah, like I have a feeling that they do intend to play some songs from The Quest, and maybe like for example in Billy's comments, maybe he was like just being kind of casual about it. Like maybe that they are for sure, because The Quest, it seems like Steve Howe is happy with it, and if he's happy with the album, there's a good chance they'll play some of the album, you know?
They have to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a requirement.
Yeah.
This is why they put it out. I don't get it. Interesting, but it's a great video. Check it out, folks. It's easy to find. Just look it up on YouTube.
Yeah,
Um,
and there are a
and
few
and
comments
yeah,
from.
read, let's get into that, but also write in now that it's out and there's going to be more people seeing it. Write in and tell us what you think this song's about, or if you happen to learn what it's about before we do, I'd love to know because now I am confused. I really am.
Right. So I'm not sure how the last name of this one is pronounced.
Henninger.
Okay, Bruce Henninger says, I liked both the song and the video. Look forward to taking a deep dive into the album as a whole. So yeah, I guess there are fans who haven't listened to the whole album yet. Maybe it's partially because of the delay in the physical release, which, I mean, I don't know how people have the patience, but kudos to people people like that, I guess.
Yeah, and we're only reading feedback on this from people with N's in their name. The next one is Tim Brennan, and he says, a monumental track, and in time will take its place as a Yes classic. That's a huge statement. And to qualify it for a lot of the naysayers, I'd love to have known how long Tim's been a fan and what some of his favorite music is. But I love that statement, and I like it too. It sounds like Yes. I'm not saying John sounds like John. I don't think John has to sound like John for it to sound like Yes. Some people will think that's crazy. Some people think that's BS. I think Yes music encompasses a lot more than just John's voice. And I'm a huge, huge fan of John Anderson, as is Steve.
But yeah, that's interesting to think about. Like, I'm looking forward to a time when, you know, we get nostalgic for when The Quest was coming out and like the stuff surrounding it. Like, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
And Jason Monahan.
Another N name.
Yeah, or it's not Monaghan, right? Like the G is silent.
You know, I'm not sure. I think, Monaghan, I believe.
Okay, it's one of those. Yeah. So
sorry, Jason.
Yeah, Jason says, love it. John Davison's finest moment. And in parentheses, he writes, so far, ...
Interesting. So, that's good. It's an accolade. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Then we have an interesting topic that is about the compilations from Cherry Red Records release October 8th. And this is about The Sin. And I have to say, what we're going to cover right now that Steve data mined is more about The Sin than I've ever read in one place or known or anything. So brace yourself, folks.
Yeah, well, there's stuff about The Sin, Empire, and Harmony and Diversity, but...
Yeah, but this is going into peeling off the outer layer of the seeds that started Yes. This is really cool stuff.
Yeah. So this release is titled The Sin, Flower Man, Rare Blooms from The Sin. And according to Henry Potts, who runs that Yes News fan site, Bandai Gazoo, you know, he's very detailed and like, it's a really great site. He says, Squire and Banks are on most tracks. In content, it is basically a re-release of most of the out-of-print 2004-2005 release Original Sin. There are no previously unreleased tracks. It's an anthology of all the surviving 60s recordings from The Sin.
Right.
And like you mentioned, Chris Squire and Peter Banks are each on some of the tracks.
And I have to ask, Steve, do you know, like, when he says there's no previously unreleased tracks, what is it about this that makes it a product? Is it because it's a compilation and everything's together?
I believe so. Like, it sounds like it's basically a reprint of something that's out of print, but under a new title.
Okay.
It also includes two tracks from pre-Sin band, The Selfs. And one of the tracks is from 2004, when I guess Chris and a couple of the other guys were trying to do stuff together. I'll get to this other bit below here in a moment, but I listened to the tracks on the official, like, you know, on YouTube there's The Sin topic, you know, the official like YouTube channel. Like, I listened to the playlist of this album, and it sounds very much like what The Who or The Stones would put out in the 60s. So it really is that time period, and I feel like if people like that sort of stuff, they'll enjoy this album. It's not for people who want just proggy stuff, because you know, music wasn't quite there yet,
but yeah, it's just like the real early Pink Floyd from like 66 through 69 was like that. It was very punk / Beatles-esque in a way, with a bit of psychedelic starting to seep in. With Syd Barrett and everything.
I think the only Sin thing I've experienced is a DVD from the mid 2000s when they reunited. It's called the Sindestructible Tour.
Wow, I never saw that.
Yeah, where have I been?
And how do I not know about this from you? Like,
yeah, it's really well shot, and you know, Chris is on it. It's really good. You should check that out whenever you're able to. But here's the thing that I thought was really cool to learn is that this compilation includes a foreword by some little known person named Phil Collins. I think he did the soundtrack for Brother Bear or something, that Disney movie.
It was Jungle Book. No, it was Tarzan.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it's that Phil Collins. It says he was a huge fan during the Sin's marquee days. And includes many previously unpublished photos and a new 5,000 word essay, Flower Man. So yeah, that's really cool that Phil Collins was like really into them.
Yeah.
And then next up, also from Cherry Red Records, The Best of Empire. And this is an 11 track compilation of tracks from Peter Banks's post Flash band Empire from the 70s, featuring vocals by Sidney Fox. It says quote from the albums Mark 1, 2, 3, and the Mars tapes. And let's see. I'm trying to find the... Oh, here's another...
By the way, those tapes languished in obscurity until they were briefly, I don't know for how long, saw release in the States in the mid-90s. So what's interesting to me about this is there's years later and beyond his passing, we're still learning about Peter Banks. A lot of people who, not just younger generation like you, but even senior citizens like me, who might be hearing some stuff from Peter pre-Yes that they never heard before. And post-Yes, for that matter.
Yeah, like I've listened to some of Flash, but I'm not sure if I've ever listened to Empire. But it says here that the band's best-known piece, a song called Sky at Night, features huge Sin fan and latter-day Genesis member Phil Collins on drums and backing vocals.
And what year would that have been?
That would have been 74, so like around the time of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I never knew this. This is awesome. I want to hear that.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, this guy from Genesis being a fan of something called The Sin. It's kind of ironic.
That's great. Well, you know, you can only take him at face value.
Yeah. And we also got this next one, The Best of Peter Banks's Harmony and Diversity. So did you want to read this next one while I get a sip of water real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Happy to. So this is the Best of compilation featuring Peter Banks' Harmony and Diversity, an experimental progressive rock incarnation for the former Yes Band. So this is post-Yes for Mr. Banks.
Yeah, 2004 to 2007,
I think
it says down there. Yeah.
Yep, culled from the string of albums that were previously gathered together in a six CD set back in 2018 featuring Banks' accomplished guitar playing. A must for Yes completists, featuring guitarist Banks, who was the original member of the band after the time of the psych legends, The Sin. Peter Banks' expressive guitar playing is captured in a best of his recordings with the HID, who existed 2004 to 2007, like Steven said, and recorded five albums as well as playing live. Goes on to say, often modal and avant-garde at times. Now that makes sense given really early Yes and earlier roots of Banks. That makes total sense. HID deliver a theatrical take on progressive rock that verges on drone, math rock, post rock, and jazz fusion with a side of ambience. Should it be ambiance?
It's one of those two.
Okay.
Harmony and Diversity is another band I've been aware of for a long time, but I'm not sure if I've heard stuff from them.
Yeah, I want to check that out. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. Like, It's always fun to discover these Peter Banks projects that he did beyond Yes, you know?
I'm curious. See, I'm really interested in... So let me rewind. So my for context, I first discovered Yes when I was 10, 11, I think, something like that, when an older cousin played me Fragile. And then I borrowed Fragile for 3 months. I don't know why he just didn't let me keep it and go get another one. But that was my introduction to Yes. Everything from Fragile forward. And my first albums I got at the same time were Yes songs and Close to the Edge. And I listened to Yes songs first over and over and over before I ever put on Close to the Edge. And then when I heard the differences between Close to the Edge, Siberian Katru, and You and I, compared to what I already learned and tattooed on my brain in Yes songs, I was like, what the hell's going on here? This is like even out of the world that was out of. So it wasn't really until sort of recently that I got into the first couple albums, believe it or not. Mm. I had heard later versions of them. So having said all that, I want to dig into this older Banks material and hear the influences that shaped the first two Yes albums, because I'm sure they're there. I'm sure they're there.
Mm. Yeah, like there've definitely been like earlier versions of some of those earlier Yes songs released elsewhere, and like those are always cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, so that's all the Cherry Red record stuff.
We're back to some news about a couple Yes members. Where's my tea? Oh, not here.
So there's this prog rock band called Lobate Scarp, and apparently they have an Indiegogo page for their like second album. And on the 11th, they made an announcement on there saying that John Davison and Billy Sherwood will be guesting on the album. So it says John Davison and Billy Sherwood of Yes will be appearing on our album as guest vocalists on the 14-minute title track, You Have It All. It's hard to get more epic than that. And yeah, it looks like they've almost met their... Oh, they've surpassed their Indiegogo goal. So,
oh,
yeah.
Good for them. That's awesome.
Yeah, now, they must have met it today, because earlier it was like they were almost there, but now they're, yeah.
That's, what was their goal?
$6,000.
That's very cool. Now, what I got out of the quote that you read that really got my attention, not only that John and Billy are on it, but just to read in this day and age, 2021.75 Q4, to read a 14-minute track, the fact that people are still out there making music makes me want to hear it. I want to hear this 14-minute track, right?
Yeah, like prog rock bands, I feel even today try to, well, like they're not as, they don't feel as constricted by certain time limits. Like they'll still put out those really long tracks. And yeah, like more often than not, whenever I see that a prog rock track is really long, I'm thinking, oh, this must be really good, and it gets me really excited.
Yeah, I want to check that out. That's cool. And then announced August 12th. This is interesting to me October on many 12th. Levels. August 12th, Asia, the official live bootlegs volume 1. That means they are probably planning or at least staging the possibility that there's going to be more. This is cool. Asia will release the live official bootlegs volume 1. Clicked the wrong button. Volume 1 on November 26th. The 10 CD box set celebrates the huge appeal of the concert tours that followed Asia's first two albums in 82 and 83. I was 19 and 20. It includes 5 concerts from Buffalo. I'm sorry, from 1982. Buffalo, USA, 1983. Worcestershire, USA, 2007, Sao Paulo, Brazil, 2008, Tokyo, and 2010, London. So let's stop there for a minute, and then we'll get, and there's a pre-order link that we'll put in the post. But we'll get to the album cover, which we'll show on the screen in a moment if you're watching the visual version of this. So what comes to my mind is I'm a huge Asia fan. I fell in love with them right away, right after the first Barry Manilow song that opens the first album. And I'm teasing. But what's curious to me is 10 CDs that make up several concerts of just two tours. So while one side of me admits, yeah, I don't know if I can get enough Asia of those 2 years, two tours, the other side of me thinks that's kind of odd to release so much redundancy. So I'm curious how different these sound, how different the performances sound. I don't think there's much of a difference in the set list from everything from one tour and everything from the other tour, respectively. So I'm not sure what's going on there unless he just wanted a place to put all this stuff.
I mean, each year looks like a different tour to me. Like,
well, that's true. And you do have 2007, 8, yeah, and 10.
Like, you got the debut album tour, the Alpha tour, I'm assuming. And then you got, like, the reunion tour, and then the Phoenix tour, and the Omega tour. At least that's what it looks like to me based on the years.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, so it encompasses more than I thought. I didn't even realize that when I read the dates. It encompasses more than just the tours of the first two albums.
Right.
It's okay. It was kind of confusing. But still, I find that interesting. and I want to get that. I'm like ready to buy it. It says pre-order. I'm going to do it. I'm curious. You know what? Let me see something. I want to click on that and see what that's going for so we can let all of you know.
Yeah, it is a little bit pricey, but I forgot the price off the top of my head.
It is £60. What is that on planet Earth? Is that more? No, that's like 47 bucks.
No, that's like 82.47 in US dollars.
Did the exchange rate the wrong way? But for 10 for 10 CDs, that's less than 10 bucks a CD. I would pay that. That's a collector's item. Not having John Wetton around anymore just makes this that much more special. This was really his band. It was am I pronouncing the word right, Steve? Impetus of the band was his idea, right?
Impetus.
Yeah.
Maybe. I get that. I'm not sure whose original idea it was, but
John's. It was John's.
Okay.
Yeah, because I had read in an interview way back then that UK was intended to be like what Asia became. It was intended to be like a prog / somewhat commercial supergroup where you had King Crimson, Yes, Eddie Jobson from Zappa and other stuff. And then you had Alan Holdsworth. It was like, whoa, but it just didn't work out. So I think John Wetton, and this is just my feeling, that when he set out to do it again,
here comes a feeling.
That's right. he was going to make sure that it worked, and he got the biggest players that he could. I mean, one of the most monumental prog drummers, Jeff Downes, a keyboard player who had really made his mark with Drama. And of course, Steve Howe. It's like, what a band. And did they freaking deliver? I saw those two tours and it was mind blowing. You couldn't get enough of it. And I'm still listening to and playing to bootlegs from those tours and the reunion tour as well. So that I'm just saying all this to emphasize that this is a great and special product. It really is. And as an Asia fan, I want it. I'm going to get it. Don't tell Anja. Is she listening?
And I mean, between us, like, you know, you're the father, I'm the son. Like, you're very nostalgic for like that early period of Asia. And I'm like really nostalgic for like the reunion period, because like that's when I got into them and discovered them. It's so like, and yeah, it's like these are really special time periods, because it's like there have been so many Asia lineups, but I think you'd be hard pressed to find many people who would say these four guys are not the classic or the most iconic lineup of Asia.
Absolutely. And so, folks, here's what's left. We're going to talk about the cover, which is now on the screen. And we've got some Rick Wakeman news and Roger Dean news. So hang in there. We're almost done. You don't want to miss any of this. We couldn't shuffle this in any order where anything had more importance to the other. So here we are. The cover is very, very interesting. It's Roger Dean. It's I'm describing it for those of you not seeing it, that the border and part of the inner art has shades of Gates of Delirium with sort of like a very neutral light gray and bone colors. And then some very, very on the left icons that are very Asian with very Japanese colors of artwork. You would see like on rice paper, things like that. It's got the classic Asia pyramid logo with some new coloring. And I'll let Stephen describe what the main subject is in the middle. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, like those icons, I just noticed, like also, I guess they each symbolize albums because you got the tiger from Omega and two fish from the Triple X album.
And it's an X.
Yeah. But the main creature on the cover, I think that's a griffin or at least something like it, or maybe it's like a hippogriff, like the ones from like Harry Potter and I guess maybe other mythology. Like it basically looks like some sort of jungle cat. I'm not sure which one because I never memorized which
it's,
one.
It's
which
part response. Leopard and okay. Cheetah. The front and the back part of it are two different cats.
Okay. Yeah, I see now. It's like there's like a little border. Okay, so and it has the head of an eagle and like some wings.
But the ears of a cat. You notice that?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then the wings of the eagle and then the front talons. I think that's what made you think of a griffin because of the front talons, but they're of either an eagle or a rooster. I'm not sure. I'm sure an eagle. I'm just kidding. So I'm not sure what that represents. Maybe, I don't know, but it's beautiful. It's really neat. Steve, what is the vertical piece of artwork that takes up the bottom left? It's like a mirrored image of a print. Is it? Yeah, oh, it says bootlegs.
Yeah, it says bootlegs.
Oh, interesting. Twice.
Yeah.
This is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But as my comment about the creature itself is that what kind of struck me about it is the way that it's inked makes me think of Rodney Matthews a bit. Like Roger Dean definitely made this. It says on the Burning Shed listing, but just the way the creature is drawn makes me think of Rodney Matthews, who did some of the other Asia albums during like the John Payne era.
So I'm just going to throw something out there, okay?
Okay.
A lot of musicians, and there's three iconic musicians, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page.
Francis Monkman, yeah.
Yeah, they met each other in art school. So I was wondering if Francis Monkman maybe also majored in art and if just maybe, I don't know. You beat me to it. It's a neat cover. I want to get this product. The only problem is, not problem, now those bootlegs are an official product, which means that's less of that inventory of music to play to online that won't get caught by the copyright algorithm because now these recordings are going to be official. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I want to blast this and play to it. I just love those in there. I think that's their prime, not as musicians, but as Asia, those first two albums. Ugh, superb, freaking superb. Awesome production. Awesome mastering, awesome songs, sounds, musicianship. I can't find one fault of the whole collection of both those albums. That's just my opinion.
Right. And and that creativity continued through the reunion period. So,
yeah, folks, chime in. Let us know what you think of this myriad of topics of, yes, their extended family and other prog news. We've got two left. That's good for Asia.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, announced October 14th, Rick Wakeman, of course, and you can tell by the name of this, Rick launches Caped Crusader. What a great name for Rick. Launches Caped Crusader Collectors Club. This is interesting. In quotes, it says, sign up to the Caped Crusaders Collectors Club. That's hard to say. The four C's.
Yeah, it is.
And receive a membership pack containing an individually numbered membership card and signed by Rick welcome letter. an exclusive yearbook full of rare photos, articles, and memorabilia from Rick's personal archive, a sticker, and 4 8x10 photos. That's a cool package. But yeah, there's more. The membership, which runs from January to December, will also contain an exclusive CD release each quarter, only to the club. That's really cool. However, if you sign up between now and the 31st of December, 2021, not only will you receive 15 months membership for the price of 12, you will also receive an exclusive bonus of the previously unreleased Wakeman soundtrack from the feature film She. That's a nice add-on. The following 4 releases for the year will feature rare and live music from the Wakeman vaults. You want to take it from there?
Yeah. So additionally, as a CCCC member, you will receive a 10% discount off all purchases, including box sets, at the Wakeman Music Emporium online only. Invites to special events, early notifications of the releases, and a totally exclusive merchandising range, along with some other goodies. What are you waiting for? It says that with question mark and exclamation mark. And Rick commented about this in a louder than sound article.
Read it in Rick's voice.
I am really excited about the Caped Crusader Collector Club as something very different. We know that's not how it really sounds.
As a musician, I think it's important that serious fans get to hear the music that would otherwise be left in drawers and on shelves, in some cases discarded.
You could take it from there.
Okay. With the formation of the CCCC, I feel that it is an innovative way for core fans to get to hear music which I have discovered in various of my archives, much of which was found when packing ready to move houses. I had completely forgotten about some of this material, and it has really surprised me what was found. It's all part of my musical journey over almost 5 decades. I truly believe that for real collectors, these exclusive CDs will be received in the same way that the treasure chest was some years ago. I hope everyone has as much enjoyment hearing these recordings as I have had after discovering them.
So what do you think is on these? It's kind of not clear.
Well, I think it says a bit more on, let me just double check real quick.
Okay, because I'm curious, A, is it unpublished material? I think it alluded to the fact that there's some live material that hasn't been released. Is there any run-throughs or outtakes or interesting footage? Is there remasters, remixes, anything like that? I guess that's part of the mystery of why you would want to get in on it, so that it's all surprise releases, basically.
Right. So like we mentioned, the bundle includes music from the original soundtrack for She. And then it lists like CCCC CD release 2, 3, 4, 5 for like the end of January, April, July, and October next year. Like, it doesn't really say any details about them. So I guess it is kind of a mystery. And right now it says $150 to like add this whole thing.
That's not bad. $150 and you get 15 months membership and access to exclusive merchandise, events, and other things. That's actually a really robust membership package, especially considering who it is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is a type of thing that, like, I mean, he mentioned the treasure chest collection. Like, that's what this reminded me of. Like, he likes to release archival stuff every once in a while. And, you know, as someone as prolific as Rick, it's like there's a lot in his archives, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting stuff. Now, some Roger Dean news. And folks, I want to interrupt that news with this news from me about him. I promise you our special Roger Dean episode is coming soon. Yes, it was recorded as a birthday tribute, but actually it was recorded as a tribute around his birthday. And it's very, very visually robust. It's loaded with tons of album covers to match what We're reading from fans that wrote in and commented on. We asked questions online. You folks answered, and a lot of comments from Steve and I. So there's a lot of imagery. It's just taking me a lot of time to carve out the time because I'm kind of busy with all kinds of stuff to edit this together. But it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to have music to go along with it. So that is coming, I promise. I have to admit, huge Roger Dean fan, this one throws me for a loop. So Roger Dean post about the Primus poster. Here's a quote.
This is on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're seeing it on the screen on the visual version. Those of you listening to the audio first, keep an eye out for that on the Yes Shift Facebook page. So Roger says, this was an adventure. My first instinct was to try something much more abstract, but this was the first idea to get real traction. I loved working with the mezzotints. You'll see what that is as you look at the artwork. Those sort of vibrant, almost chromish metallic colors are the mezzotints. The painting was about time travel with a robotic hummingbird in the foreground against an ancient Egyptian backdrop. Or is it? He says, Zoltron asked me to do this and worked with me and the printers, and Mike Innes worked with me in the UK playing with the early ideas. Seven color serigraph, 24 by 18 inch poster, edition of 420, not available at the concert tonight with an artist edition released through Chambers Project in November. More details to follow.
Oh yeah, it was available at the concert tonight in Berkeley as we're recording this, yeah.
Right, so Zoltron, I'm gonna read this next thing, then Steve and I are gonna give our thoughts on this cover, and we'd love yours. Tonight's Primus poster, I had the amazing opportunity to work with one of my childhood heroes and a man I've gotten to know this year and call a friend, the undeniable Roger Dean. Roger Dean official page. Oh, that was the tag in the post.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
I forgot to delete that.
That's okay. That's right. Then it says, when I was a kid, I'd go to my brother's bedroom and get lost staring into the fantastic worlds in Roger Dean album covers for Yes. His work was and continues to be so appealing to me. I feel the same way. His art and the album art of Storm. Oh, I forgot about this. Storm. Is it Strom? Should it be Strom or is it? Yeah, it's Storm Thorgerson. And other pioneers from that era were the beginning of my love and subsequent pursuit of desire combining art and music. I remember Storm's work. Absolutely. Boris was another one. My friend Brian Chambers choreographed this project, and together we worked with Roger on creating tonight's Primus poster, a seven, and yes, Primus the band, we'll get back to that. A seven color screen print, tediously and masterfully printed by Monolith Press, nice plug. The size is 24 inches by 18 inches. Edition of 420 pieces, as we've already learned and mentioned. They'll be available at the merch booth, blah, 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 during the show. This is really cool. So if I could give my take on this first.
Yeah, and we should mention that Primus's current tour is called A Tribute to Kings, which, yeah, go ahead.
And that's playing the whole Rush album, Farewell to Kings, in its entirety. The artwork on its own is amazing. I love it. And I love the mezzotones. I love this whole different look, sort of. But the same look. It's clearly Roger Dean, right?
Right. And it has, I think the mechanical looking hummingbird is actually from one of those video game covers he did in the 80s called Chrono Quest. So there's some repurposing there, but yeah.
Okay. A new font dedicated specifically to Primus. My disconnect isn't that this artwork is for Primus. It's that it's not to minimize the other work you've done, Roger, for so many other phenomenal musical artists, but your name and your artwork is synonymous with the band Yes. And here you are doing
Asia.
And here you are doing work for another band who's doing a Rush tribute. That's where my brain kind of went. But that aside, I'm not saying it's wrong or it shouldn't have been done. I'm just saying, oh, that's a, like a whole different spin on this man's catalog now. And Rush should be honored. They should be honored that Primus is doing this. And they should be honored that they got the Yes guy to do the artwork. I think there's a really neat tie in there. I'd love to see this show. I don't know if I will. Can't wait to see the videos and watch the listen to the bootlegs.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's interesting how we're so used to a certain visual language for Rush and a visual language for Yes. But it makes me wonder, like, if Yes had gone with someone else for Fragile onward, and then maybe Rush had gone with Roger Dean from the start, like, what would people ever have thought? You know, I'm not sure this art fits Rush. Maybe it would fit that other band. Yes, like,
but,
I don't know.
But maybe his art would have been completely different being influenced by the music of Rush.
Yeah, that's true.
It might not have been so, I'm going to use the term smooth and curvy. Even though that's an immense part of Roger's style, maybe the music would have been an influence where it'd be more geometric and whatnot, like we find in some of the Asia stuff. I don't know. I'm totally hypothesizing, folks. Don't think that I'm trying to say I'm in Roger Dean's head or anything like that. It's just a fantasy guess. That's all it is after snorting some Cheetos dust.
Yeah, podcasting from Roger Dean's head. Yeah, and we have this other item at the bottom of this, but was that everything you had to say?
Yeah, well, I want to get your take on the artwork.
Oh, okay.
And the fans.
So I really like this. I have to be careful so that I don't sound like I'm saying I don't really like this, because how it's, okay. I love this. It's Roger Dean. It's like he can't really make anything that I straight up dislike, really, but it looks really cool. It's not what I would imagine for a Rush tribute, like we mentioned, but it's cool that they made this poster for this Primus show. And, you know, I've heard a bit of Primus, you know, they've done the South Park theme song. And I remember on my way to the airport 4 years ago when I was about to fly over to England, like, my driver at the time was playing Primus.
Really?
In the car, yeah.
What was he playing? Pork soda?
Actually, you know what? I think it was. Yeah, that title sounds very familiar.
I love that album. Pork soda is great.
Yeah. Is Pork Soda just the album name, or is it also a song title?
It's both.
Okay, so, yeah, at least that song. And I think he mentioned something was on, well, those Tony Hawk Pro Skater games, but
I
remember it sounded really cool.
That's cool. And by the way, before we continue with your take on the art, I was just realizing the one time I saw Primus, and I love them, I really should see them more. The one time I saw Primus was the last time Rush had an opening act.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Was that the Spirit of Radio tour? Permanent Waves tour? I think it was.
I'm not sure if Primus was around then.
Oh, then it was.
Okay, yeah, it says they started in 84.
So I'm having a brain fart. So it was whatever tour that was. Yeah, it couldn't have been Spirit of Radio. What am I saying? That was 1979. And in fact, I remember, now we're going down the Rush rabbit hole, they had three bands open for this. Three bands, and none of them were in that Rush universe whatsoever. It was Molly Hatchet, 38 Special, and another sort of Southern rock band like that. I can't think of the name right now. And it was such a disconnect. It was so weird. So, of course, it wasn't Permanent Waves.
Yeah, so I actually found it. And
is it your shirt?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it is. I didn't know beforehand. It's like... Yeah, the Roll the Bones tour.
Yeah, that was the last tour. And I remember Les Claiborne just jumping around in his unitard long johns. It was like, huh? And you know who was really into them? So this would have been, I had first got turned on to Primus when they first started. by Paul Lamb, the bass player of Opus One, the band that I was in, the prog rock band out of LA. He's the one that got me into them, actually. So, go ahead with your take on the album cover. I'm sorry.
The show poster. Yeah, it's
show poster.
It's it doesn't look very new to me. Like I mentioned earlier, this bird looks straight out of Chrono Quest, but it's still visually pleasing to the eye, as is usually the case with Roger Dean. And to have Primus in like a Roger Dean ish font is like that's a huge honor. Like,
yeah, and that looks cool. I actually like that. It looks neat. It's unique,
yeah,
yet Roger Dean, and it's unique to Primus. It doesn't look like it's supposed to be Yes or Green Slate or Asia. It looks like it's meant for Primus.
Yeah, exactly. Like it has the curvy leg from the M, and it just looks really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like a really cool poster for people to own. So yeah. So do you have anything else to say on that before we move on to this last thing?
No, and I almost forgot about this last thing. Sorry.
Okay. So this actually kind of relates to an episode we have in the works. So John Anderson's birthday is coming up in a bit, like later this month.
It's going to be 88. Just kidding.
Close. He's going to be 77.
Wow. Yeah.
And so we're going to be talking about a couple of things. One of them is we're going to be looking back on the recent tour he did with Paul Green, Rock Academy, you know, those young people. Feel free to chime in with your thoughts on those shows if you saw them in person or even just saw videos of them. But one of the other things we'll be talking about is this single that's coming out on October 21st from a band called Inventioning. Now, as I understand, this band formed kind of out of the Anderson Ponte band, if I understand correctly. I'll do more research on it for that episode. But yeah, they're releasing a single on the 21st titled Some People. And this features Anderson's vocals recorded partially in 2007 and 2013. And also Oliver Wakeman on keyboards recorded November 2014. So this song has been in the works since 2007, and they're finally going to put out that single on multiple platforms on the 21st.
And they
also have a spot fund campaign for the song's music video, which you can find on, they've linked it on their Facebook page, the Inventioning Facebook page. I'll link their Facebook page in the show notes of this, but yeah, so that's really cool being able to hear more Anderson as well as more Oliver.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be an interesting. When does that come out again?
On the 21st.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Coming Thursday. Yeah.
Great. I'd like to check that out.
Yeah. We'll listen to it and then record either later that day or a day later or something, so we can put out the episode on John's birthday.
It mentions. There's a single called Onward. Is it a remake of Onward by Yes?
Oh, yeah. A while ago, they did a cover of Onward. And there's also a cover of Owner of a Lonely Heart on their YouTube channel.
Huh. So, interesting.
Yeah.
I love Onward. And I think the best version of it is on Keys Live. That is just so beautiful.
Yeah.
The vocals, Chris is just outstanding on that.
The added guitar intro.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. That's a cool song.
Just so good.
Yeah. That'd be a good song to really demonstrate completely embodies one side of Yes music. You know, you've got the intro to Close to the Edge and the crazy part of Gates of Delirium, and there's some crazy stuff on Tales. And then there's Onward, which embodies a whole other part of Awaken, Wondrous Stories, and different things like that, Turn of the Century. You know, it's just one of those songs that really reflects that era and that lineup. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
What do you think, folks?
Yeah, let us know what you all think about all the stuff we've talked about, the archival stuff and upcoming stuff. You can email us at yesshiftpodcast@gmail.com and we might read your thoughts on the show.
So, Steve, I'm going to ask you something that I'm also asking the listeners to please write in, comment on the post. Out of all that news, what's your biggest like, whoa, or I can't wait for that? Or what do you think's the biggest thing for you and all that?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me scroll through the notes real quick. Because, I mean, I'm such a huge John Anderson geek. So it's like whenever something that has his voice on it, it's like my ears are all over that. It might be the Asia box set because I just love that original lineup. And, you know, I love when they release like these live recordings officially and just like added to the like official library, I guess you could say. It certainly doesn't hurt that the cover looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that'd be cool to have, but yeah, I don't know. What about you? Like, what are you most interested in out of what we talked about?
I think it's that. I think that Rick's membership thing is very, very well thought out and exclusive. I love that. And I think I'm interested to dig into the stuff from Peter Banks because I really want to. I think to get to know him helps to get to know the beginnings of Yes even further, you know? And I've grown, the music of that era has grown more and more and more on me. I love those first really early Pink Floyd albums that sound Beatlesque on even more acid, if you will, I guess, and a bit more punk. But for me, it's the Asia thing. I'm really psyched to hear these live performances because they were so good live and the musicians were, I don't want to say at their prime because I don't know what that is for musicians at that level. They just always were great, but Asian music was at its prime, I think it's fair to say.
Right. And I'm kind of wondering like what volume 2 could include, like maybe, I don't know, like, would they stay just to original lineup stuff, in which case they'd have to dig up something from Triple X, or would they go beyond original lineup, but within that same lineage, like Astra or maybe Gravitas later on? Like, I don't know.
And would it have to be something with Steve Howe? You know what I mean? Like, how far would they deviate?
Right.
Because like Asia, I'm going to just say it, Asia's not Asia without Francis Monkman. Okay.
Right.
Well, no, but you know what I mean, you know?
It's like I was about to say, on the site originalasia.com, the discography is pretty much just the Wetton stuff. So like I'm pretty certain like the John Payne stuff is pretty much separate at this point. So it'd have to be stuff that features Wetton. I suppose if they really wanted to, they could release something from when Billy filled the role and later Bumblefoot, I guess. Like I don't know, like I don't know what their plans are,
but I don't think they would. I don't think they would. I think this is more of a commemorative thing that they're doing to dig back, you know. I think that's
okay, like a retrospective type of
thing. So, but we'll see. Let us know, folks. And like Steve said, you could follow us on Facebook at Yes Shift. So facebook.com/yesshift and our podcast audio version through anchor.fm/yesshift, which is on which other branches, Steve?
If you go to Anchor, you'll see all the different platforms we're on, including Apple, Spotify, and several other places I never heard of before.
Overcast.
Yeah, Castbox, I think, is another one.
Yeah.
Like, just all sorts of weird names.
Yeah. So we're out there. Follow us. Enjoy it. Give us suggestions. We've gotten some great ones. We are going to follow up. And we will see you soon on the next one. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.